It is a pleasure for us to continue our study in the book of Proverbs. We're in the 12th chapter, ready to begin at the 8th verse. As we said before, each verse in this chapter constitutes a separate proverb, and it's actually a separate lesson. Verse 8 reads like this: "A man shall be commended according to his wisdom, but he that is of a perverse heart shall be despised." Here we are told how to have a good reputation. Praise and commendation go to those who have wisdom. Especially is this true of those who receive praise from God. That is, their actions are best suited for the occasion. They best know how to avoid stupid and foolish decisions. They not only have knowledge, but they know how to apply the knowledge so they avoid the mistakes of the foolish. Not only does this praise come from their fellow humans in this life, but God also appreciates the wisdom of humans, for this means that the truly wise will follow God's will and keep His commandments. John 14:21, Jesus said, "He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and will manifest myself to him." So it's most important then for us to have wisdom, to have knowledge, and to apply this so that we're keeping God's commandments. But this proverb also says, "He that is a perverse heart shall be despised." Expect no true honor if you have a perverse or crooked heart that leads you into wrong and foolish actions. Your fellow humans will hold you in contempt. You'll be looked upon as unworthy to be dealt with and unfit to be trusted. You'll be as a blemish and an outcast to mankind. And likewise, God shall look with disfavor on the person with a perverse or crooked heart. The God of heaven will despise those who persist in wicked actions. In Matthew 24:48-51, "But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and he shall begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour when he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So, mankind and God together do not appreciate a person with a perverse heart. That person shall be despised. So our proverb says again, verse 8, "A man shall be commended according to his wisdom, but he that is a perverse heart shall be despised." Our next proverb is in verse 9. Verse 9 reads like this: "He that is despised and hath a servant is better than he that honoreth himself and lacketh bread." There are several proverbs that make a distinct comparison using the words "better than," and this proverb is doing that very thing. This proverb is comparing a person who is regarded by society as being poor when he is really not in poverty with a person who gives himself much honor but who really is in a state of poverty. He says, "He that is despised," that is one who is not regarded by society as being in a high noble class. He's in a despised condition, but his true character is unappreciated because he is not actually of the lower class. "He hath a servant." This man is of a much higher station in life, and his character is of a much more noble class than those around him realize. He does not let their ignorance be his problem. He does not exalt himself. Actually, it is what God thinks of us that really matters, rather than what man thinks. If we're pleasing to God, He will take care of us regardless of what men think. Those who live according to God's will may find themselves displeasing to others who do not serve God. Yet this godly person is in a much better position than those who have the praise of the world. But the contrast here with this person who is despised and hath a servant is made with another type of person. He that honoreth himself. This person wants the honor of the world, but evidently he has to pretend to do something or to be something he is not, which makes him a hypocrite. Actually, this person who is being hypocritical does not have enough bread, but he really is poor and actually does not deserve to be numbered with the high and wealthy. Yet, instead of seeing and accepting his true station in life, he honoreth himself when he does not deserve it. If he wanted to improve his position, that would be good, but he gives himself honor, which he should not have. Whether one has the honor of the world who is not the important thing. This despised man who has no honor, but who has the ability to provide for his needs, is in a much better circumstance than the one who seeks for honor and cannot provide for his needs. In Matthew 23:11-12, "But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant, and whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted." So we see then that the effort we put into exalting ourselves is really futile effort. If we try to exalt ourselves, we're going to be abased. We're going to be brought down. But the humble, the servant, that's the one who shall be exalted. Again, in Mark 10:35-45, we have this little passage given. "And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came unto him, saying, Master, we would that thou shouldest do for us whatsoever we shall desire. And he said unto them, What would you that I should do for you? And they said unto him, Grant unto us that we may sit one on the right hand and the other on thy left hand in thy glory. But Jesus said unto them, You know not what you ask. Can you drink of the cup that I drink of, and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? And they said unto him, We can. And Jesus said unto them, Ye shall indeed drink of the cup that I drink of, and with the baptism I'm baptized withal shall ye be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared. And when the 10 heard it, they began to be much displeased with James and John. But Jesus called them to him and saith unto them, You know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. But so shall it not be among you, but whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister, and whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many." So we see from this passage that we should be contented to serve God rather than to seek honor, that our duty is to serve, not to be honored, not to seek honor. Whatever honor we deserve will come to us in due time. We will be honored if we deserve to be honored. In Matthew 25:31-34, "When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." So at the great judgment day, those who deserve to be honored are going to be honored. Jesus is going to put them on the right hand, and he's going to tell them to come and to inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So we will get honor in due time. So let's read this proverb again, Proverbs 12:9. "He that is despised and hath a servant is better than he that honoreth himself and lacketh bread." Let's not honor ourselves. Let's do the thing that's right, and when we deserve to have honor, honor will come to us. The next proverb is found in verse 10. "A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel." One of the greatest qualities of a righteous person is mercy. The righteous have compassion for humans. In Matthew 7:12, "Therefore all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Romans 12:18, "If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men." Romans 13:8, "Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law." So we see the Bible teaches many times that we're to have compassion for others. We're to have mercy for others. That's a trait of a godly person. But the righteous is also to have a great regard for the life and well-being of the animals too. This regard for animals is not only because they may be a servant or friend, but also because they're God's creatures, and as such they are a part of the grand scheme of creation which involves man and beasts. The animals that are under our care must be provided for, must have food and protection, and must not be abused or neglected. It is intended that humans have dominion over the animals. When we read of God's creation of humans and of animals, this is plainly taught to us. In Genesis 1, verses 27 and 28, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." So here we see in the very beginning the first two commands to man. One was to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. We're just going to be here for a short while, and we need to replace ourselves. So that's one of the great duties that we're to have, not just to have children, but to raise those children. And the other duty, the other command is to replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowls of the air and over every living thing that moveth. So man is to subdue and dominate. That's the second great command. That is, we are to survive here, and we are in charge of all the other things on this earth. We're to use them, subdue and dominate. And it doesn't mean that we are going to waste or abuse them, but we use them in a proper way. This authority man has over the other living things does not excuse needless abuse. The law of Moses provided for the care of oxen. The ox and the ass had a day of rest, according to Exodus 23:12. The ox that treaded out the corn was not to be muzzled, Deuteronomy 25:4. Balaam was stopped from beating his ass in Numbers 22, verses 27 through 30. So those who are not just to the brute creatures, those who vent their anger and give barbaric treatment to other animals, are giving evidence to the fact that they are among the wicked. These creatures suffer from the curse of Adam just as we do. In Romans 8, 22 through 23, "For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body." So it is not our privilege to add to that suffering which the other creatures endure. Those who are truly wicked can be unmerciful to a great degree. Even their tender mercies are cruel, according to the proverb. That natural compassion which is in a person as a human is lost, and what should be mercy and compassion is actually hard-heartedness. When they think they're being compassionate, they're actually being cruel. As Pilate resolved concerning the innocent Christ, "I will chastise him and let him go." He thought that was a compassionate statement, but really it was a very cruel statement. That's in Luke 23, verse 22. Jesus Christ did not deserve to have one stripe laid on him. They may pretend kindness, but it's only a cover for cruelty. So our proverb, again, verse 10, "A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel." The wicked, even when they think they're being so tender and so kind, they really are being cruel out of their ignorance for how to treat other beings. So that concludes the 10th verse. The next proverb in verse 11 reads like this: "He that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding." NIV words it this way: "He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment." This phrase, "he that tilleth his land," refers to a person who takes care of his job or profession, whatever it may be. This person takes care of his duties and obligations, which are his to do for supporting himself or his family. All of us who work for a living have certain obligations to which we must attend if we're going to be successful. If we become lazy or neglectful in our business, it will reduce our income. Or if we make unwise choices in our business affairs, we will suffer for it in some way. But by tilling the land, so to speak, we should be rewarded with the product of the land, or with the product of whatever our business may be. This is a general rule for all occupations. The sluggard was told to go to the ant to consider her ways and be wise in Proverbs 6, verse 6 through 8. This is the way to be successful in supporting ourselves in this life. The Word of God not only tells us how to successfully conduct our spiritual lives, but it also tells us how to conduct our temporal lives successfully. This law of being diligent in our jobs in order to be successful has been a law ever since the Garden of Eden, and it has lasted from Adam until Jesus comes again. We must understand this principle, or we will have much difficulty in being a productive part of society. But he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. The phrase vain persons is translated as frivolity, according to the New King James Version, or as chasing vanity, NIV Version. This is actually energy expended in worthless pursuits and fantasies. This has the same result as laziness as far as being successful is concerned. A person who does not know the value of tilling the land, so to speak, of working at his trade or business, is void of understanding. In other words, he does not know the most basic principle of how to make a living. The Bible teaches us that we are to know how to support ourselves. The Apostle Paul was a tent maker, and he wrote these words in 2 Thessalonians 3:7-12. For yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we behave not ourselves disorderly among you, neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labor and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you. Not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work, and eat their own bread. Now this is very plain teaching in this passage. He makes such statements as, if any should not work, neither should he eat. That's very plain. Don't work, you don't eat. He says the thing to do, instead of being in a state of not working at all, they are to work with quietness and eat their own bread. And this is the command of the Lord Jesus Christ. Not just some little suggestion someplace, but it's a command to work with quietness and eat your own bread. Ephesians 4:28 says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. So instead of being a thief, work. Work with the hands. Work the thing that's good. There is work you can do with your hands that is not good. But here we're talking about work that's good, that you may have to give to him that has needed. So instead of stealing from someone, you're going to be in a position to give to someone. Those who follow the Bible principle of working diligently at their occupations, which is expressed here as he that tilleth his land, shall be satisfied with bread, the proverb says. That is, they will be able to be contented with the product of their labors. We appreciate the things we earn from our labors more than free gifts given to us. It is intended that we prosper according to our labor. After the curse, Adam was told, in the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread. Genesis 3:19. So he that tilleth his land is actually a figure referring to any worthwhile task that is done. Shall be satisfied with bread is a figure referring to the benefits one gets from doing that task. And to chase vanity, according to NIV, is a figure referring to doing those things which are not worthwhile. And void of understanding is a figure referring to the poor results obtained by doing those unworthwhile activities. So let's read again this proverb in verse 11. According to King James, he that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. NIV words it like this, he who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. The next proverb is in verse 12. It reads like this, the wicked desireth the net of evil men, but the root of the righteous yieldeth fruit. Here we get a look at the character of those who are wicked. Their desire is to obtain the things which can be acquired by doing evil deeds. Some of them do prosper quite well with earthly goods, though they are spiritually depraved and deprived. The greatest of their time and their energy is spent in doing evil so they may obtain earthly wealth by those means. Certainly they do not have to do those evil things, but they desire to do so. They do this because they want to do it. But the righteous, on the other hand, live the simple life of obedience that produces blessings, both earthly and spiritual. God is pleased with the lives of the righteous persons, and God will see to it that they have the appropriate blessings. So just as the root of a tree runs deep and brings the tree nourishment and strength, even so the figurative root of the righteous supplied them with nourishment and strength, both physical and spiritual. In Psalms 1, verses 3 through 6, we have a picture given of how this applies to the righteous, the idea of the tree being nourished by the rivers of waters. Psalm 1, verse 3 through 6, "And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly are not so. They are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish." Now that's some very plain teaching also, as we see how we are to prosper. If we're righteous, we're going to be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. We'll have the fruit in the due season. The leaf will not wither, and whatsoever we do will prosper. But the ungodly are not like this. The ungodly shall not stand in the judgment day. Sinners are not going to be in the congregation of the righteous, for the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. That's a very final and absolute statement, to just simply say, the way of the ungodly shall perish, for the way of the righteous shall stand. So let's again read our proverb in this 12th verse. "The wicked desireth the net of evil men, but the root of the righteous yieldeth fruit." NIV words it, "The wicked desire the plunder of evil men, but the root of the righteous flourisheth." So we have a choice. We can be among the wicked, we can be among the righteous, and we will appropriately be blessed according to whichever our choice is. And with this 12th verse, we bring our lesson to a close at this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.